You are now listening to The Griot's Black Podcast Network, Black Culture Amplified.
Hello. We're back again. And I know you've probably heard about all these stop woke anti-CRT laws. The last we counted, it's 44 states have passed laws to ban critical race theory, or what they call critical race theory. And people are mad, man. But, you know, this is not the first time we've seen these kinds of laws. So I want to welcome you to The Griot Daily, the only podcast that'll tell you about the other CRTs. Yeah, I mean, I know everybody, you know, mostly we center this on Ron DeSantis, the presidential candidate who passed the Stop Woke Act and anti-diversity, equity, and inclusion laws. And
we will never, ever surrender to the woke mob. Florida is where woke goes to die.
All of this is premised on this idea of critical race theory. Now, we're not even going to go into what critical race theory is because, you know, we've talked about that before on this podcast. And if you want to know, just go look at the other podcast. But I want you to understand that this is not the first time we've seen CRT laws pass around the country. In fact, you know, we know that no school, especially kindergarten students or first graders or elementary school or even high school students, are learning CRT. Because, you know, if I was a teacher and I was able to get my students to understand graduate level social theory and the history of theoretical education, I would be bragging about it. But for some reason, we never see any CRT teachers on camera. And, you know, it's posited or it's framed as this like black movement, but across the country, like 80% of teachers are white. So how are all these white teachers teaching this supposedly pro-black, anti-white subject that they have named CRT? But to understand this, you have to understand that, again, these are not the first critical race theory laws. They just rename them every now and then. So let's go through some of them. So perhaps the first anti-CRT law was the Negro Act of 1740. That was in South Carolina, after an enslaved man named Jimmy gathered up all of his fellow enslaved people and went on this killing spree. The white people figured out that they had to do something. So they created, the South Carolina General Assembly passed the Negro Act. And because it happened the year after the revolt, the 1739 revolt called the Stonewall Rebellion, we know it as the Negro Act of 1740, or the South Carolina Negro Act of 1740, but it was just really called the Negro Act. And the goal was to control the disobedient, this is a quote now, the disobedient and evil-minded Negroes and other slaves. Now, that act had a lot of provisions. I mean, it was really long. You can really find the whole thing in its entirety, although it is proudly displayed in the South Carolina State House. But one of the provisions, besides like determining what clothes they can wear, like banning black people from playing drums, playing loud instruments, singing together, leaving the plantation in groups of more than two, one of the things it did is banned enslaved people from writing. Now, I know you probably heard like they were banned from reading and writing, but that's not actually true. Initially, they were just banned from writing. And that law became the template for almost every state's slave codes, the Negro Act of 1740, because they wanted to, and this is a quote again, find all and every person and persons whatsoever who hereinafter teach or cause any slave or slaves to be taught to write. But again, it didn't work. It's estimated that what white people know of as 10% of enslaved people still learned how to read and write, risking their life to read and write. And so in 1822, another literate enslaved man, formerly enslaved man named Denmark Vesey, he freed himself by winning a lottery. Like, they used to have a lottery. So Denmark Vesey was teaching founder of this church called Emmanuel AME, African Methodist Episcopal Church. Now we know it as Mother Emmanuel. If you remember, in 2015, a white supremacist killed 9 people at Mother Emmanuel. But Mother Emmanuel has a long black history, right? And in the 1820s, they would teach enslaved people and black people in general how to read and write. And so when Denmark Vesey supposedly planned this slave conspiracy, this revolt, and the white people found out, first of all, they burned Mother Emmanuel to the ground. They, again, banned people from now reading and writing, banned any literate black person from even entering the state, right, without a white person to vouch for them. Anti-CRT laws, because they thought that slaves who were able to read, or black people who were able to read, were planning an anti-white conspiracy. So that act was passed in 1822. And then after emancipation, you probably heard of the Black Codes, right? So states all over passed these codes that prevented slaves from, basically incarcerated formerly enslaved people or freedmen for doing stuff like, you know, learning, reading. And they did it under the guise of what they call vagrancy law. So if you weren't working, then they could lock you up. If you even were learning a trade without the permission of a white person, they would lock you up. Like in Virginia, right, the vagrancy law forbade black people from learning how to be an artisan, learning a trade, for even walking around without having something that they were doing apparent. It was an anti-CRT law because that law was basically formed to keep black people from learning things because they thought that it would foment another kind of rebellion. And then in 1868, South Carolina's legislature, which was majority black, created the first public schools in America, and states all across the country created more anti-CRT laws, namely Jim Crow laws, right? And these Jim Crow laws didn't just segregate schools, right? It determined what they could and couldn't learn, because these schools were governed by a state board of education, because that is what the black people in South Carolina created. And a few years later, a family of white supremacists, one of them, the main one, named Rutherford, she came up with this theory called the Lost Cause Movement, right, that wanted to tell people, want to force schools to teach that, like, the slaves, the Confederacy was about states' rights, that slave masters were good. And one of the things she did is she used that same mechanism that black legislators had created, those school board board of educations, to get them to say, we are going to create a template for a curriculum. Now, that curriculum and that template also determined which books they could use. And all of the books had to be approved by Rutherford's group, the United Daughters of the Confederacy. In fact, in North Carolina, this is a quote, North Carolina Division Governor Robert B. Glenn assured his constituents that he would only appoint Lost Cause loyalists to the textbook commission. By 1916, the division itself was reviewing history books and sending their written reviews, approvals, and rejections directly to the state textbook commission. It was an anti-CRT law. And then in 1954, the Supreme Court ruled that segregation was unconstitutional. And again, the anti-CRT movement sprang up again, but this time they were called it depends on what state you were in. In Virginia, for instance, they called it a massive resistance. They wanted to resist equality, I guess. In Mississippi, it was called the Mississippi Sovereignty Commission, which said that white people were sovereign, or a synonym, supreme. And they passed the same laws. Not only did these textbooks decide what black students could learn, they mandated that these white schools learned a kind, benevolent history of segregation. It was an anti-CRT law. They stopped black children from fomenting these ideas that white people were racist or that racism existed. And then a few years later, in the 1970s, schools began to pass these standardized curriculums that encompassed all of the subjects. And they used that template created by the United Daughters of the Confederacy, that textbook approval template, and they formed official committees. And they forbade white people from reading books, that not just the textbooks, right? But like if your teacher assigned you a book, it had to be approved by this statewide commission. It was an anti-CRT law. And so that advanced into various states passing book bans. They passed, how teachers could teach. There's always been an organized effort to stop black people, or people in general, from learning the true history of America. And it was called the Lost Cause. It was called Evil Negroes. It was called Black Codes. It was called just Negro Acts. But it was always about the same thing: to prevent black people from knowing their history and from knowing white history. And that is the important part. White history is the thing that anti-CRT laws are aimed at. That history of white supremacy, that history of racism, is what they don't want you to know. Whether it was about the founding fathers' racism or the black people's resistance to institutionalized white supremacists and terrorism. If there's one thing that we know, is that they can't stop history and they can't stop the truth. And that's why you need to tell a friend about this podcast. That's why you need to subscribe. That's why you need to download that Grio streaming service, that app on your TV, on your phone, on your iPad, or wherever you watch stuff. I don't think it's on a radio. Maybe it's coming soon. And that's also why we leave you with a saying from Black America. And today's saying is, history is critical. History is always about race, but real history is never a theory. We'll see you next time on The Grio Daily.
If you like what you heard, please give us a 5-star review, download the Grio app, subscribe to the show, and share it with everyone you know. Please email all questions, suggestions, and compliments to podcast@thegrio.com.
Coming this February, the Grio Black Podcast Network presents Dear Culture, Truish Black Stories.
When you think of sheer artistry, sheer creativity, the ability for someone to bring black people together in the most fundamental ways, it's, you know, I would say, of my four, Randy Watson's my number one.
When the news about Ricky first broke, what I heard about it is the thing you hear about, you know, every time somebody black
dies, that it was gang related. That means the police don't know what happened. So they just said, probably the gangs, probably, you know, the other black dudes.
When I think of Akilah, you know, I just think about how impressionable white people can be. I think about how, you know, if you watch that movie again, you know, she should have lost like 3 times.
Where were you when you heard the story about them suckers getting served by Wade's dance crew?
You know, it's crazy that you mentioned this. So as a New Yorker, right, everyone knows where they were on 9/11, right? You know, a couple years later, right, 2003, everyone hears about this crazy moment in a boxing ring, because that's where dancers duke it out, right? In boxing rings.
If you could say something to Ricky right now, what would you say to him?
Ricky, you shouldn't have never got that girl pregnant. You knew I had a crush on you. You should have got with me instead.
Moments in Black culture examined like never before. Join us each week as we dive into the Black moments that changed us, that changed the world. Make sure to subscribe to Dear Culture so you never miss an episode.